Hey, so I have a thing sent in by an alert listener, which might be vandalism, food vandalism,
Oh, now that's new.
or it might be a deeply inept food heist.
You know, we haven't even touched food vandalism. I bet there's a lot
There
of people
probably
who,
are.
smear. I guess anytime someone's house gets egged, that's food vandalism.
That's food vandalism.
Yes.
Ariana Grande licking all those donuts. That was food vandalism.
I have no idea what you're even
You,
talking
what? You didn't
about.
hear about that?
I vaguely, it crossed like my desk, but like, was it really Ariana?
Ariana Grande, really for real, in the era of cell phones, decided it would be a good idea to lick a bunch of donuts that she wasn't gonna buy.
So I think I saw that video and did not connect. It was Ariana Grande. I thought
Yeah.
it was
Just some
dumb
random
college
person.
kid licking donuts and thinking it was
I
silly.
mean, you're not super wrong.
Okay. Okay.
And then, like, there were copycats and there were people who would film themselves going in and, like, taking the lid off of ice cream in a grocery
Yeah.
store and licking
I know
that.
that whole phase started. She kicked
Yeah.
that off.
I don't know if she kicked it off or if she was just a part of it,
I
but
mean, can we
she's
go
a
back
very
to
influential person, so let's give her credit.
grabbing ice cream cones by the ice cream instead? That was a much better prank. Because you'd paid for the ice cream already. And yeah. Well,
Yeah.
food vandalism.
Now that we've
So
talked about,
wait, is food
yes.
vandalism vandalism to food or vandalism using food? Because I was imagining it's vandalism using
Using
food,
food.
but you're talking about vandalism upon the food.
Yes. Well, at the scale of this article, it's both.
Okay. So before we get to this, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Isaac, our mutual friend, VP of Creative Development here, he has a dream to someday lick a Van Gogh.
To lick a Van Gogh.
Yes, it's always
Okay.
stuck in my head because
Well then.
he's an artist. He thinks the paint looks so thick and interesting on a Van Gogh because he's a painter, and he's always been like, my secret dream is to someday lick a Van Gogh. And
Well,
does
we
the
just
Van
got
Gogh
him
be
banned from every art
yeah
museum.
does the Van Gogh become food if he licks
If
it?
he licks it,
Yeah.
I don't know.
And is that then food vandalism
I've
of a Van Gogh?
licked a lot of things that I don't know if they count as food, right?
I thought we discussed phrasing,
Yes,
Dan.
phrasing.
I mean, that was the whole joke.
All right, let me hear
Okay,
your food
so here
heist.
we go.
Yeah.
This happened in Spain.
Spain. I like Spain.
In Ribera del Duero, the Cepa 21 winery, or as they
Okay.
would say it, the Cepa 21 winery,
That's right.
somebody sneaked in and the big vats where they kind of cure the wine, I don't know if you call it curing, they ferment the wine,
Okay.
they just opened the nozzles and sprayed 60,000 liters of wine onto the floor.
It's got to be worth a lot.
Estimated at over $2.5 million worth of lost wine.
Because you said 60, and I thought to hear 1,000 euros. And then I
No,
heard,
60,000 liters. Yeah, so potentially a food heist if they were just really bad and were like, I forgot the buckets.
Don't you stop after the first one if you forgot the bucket? Like,
One, yes.
what kind of heist?
Unless it was your job, it's a whole team of experts, and your job is to open all the valves, and then Reggie's supposed to run in
With
with
the
the buckets,
buckets.
and then he didn't run in with the buckets.
How are you going to get 60,000 liters out in buckets, Dan?
Well, you have to have a lot of buckets.
You will have to have a
Yeah.
lot of buckets, won't you?
And possibly some 10-gallon hats.
I'm not going to even grace that one with a reply. I think your postulization. I think your thought regarding it maybe being incompetent thieves is a little far-fetched.
It is a pretty far-fetched.
Yes.
They are pretty much certain that this is sabotage. They have no idea yet who did
Yeah.
it. Well, at least at the time that this article was written, they didn't know who did it. This article's from, oh, Monday. So it's still
Okay.
very recent. They might have a suspect. They might not. We'll
Yeah.
see.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. And like I said, at that scale, You are destroying the wine and potentially destroying a large portion of the winery because you've soaked it in 60,000 gallons of alcohol.
The champagnes? It's not champagne, so yeah. It doesn't quite work. But
that
champagne
does sound like a cool like indie band name.
Right? Champagne. Yeah. Pretty good champagne. Food heist name.
Let's see. Mm-hmm. Wine.
Yeah, I mean, the Winers is just too obvious.
The Winers.
And that would only count if they were, like, protesting something by, this is just being a pain. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their name should be about cheese instead, and then just connoisseurs will connect it with wine intellectually.
I'm sure that's exactly what will happen. Yes.
Yeah, so there you go.
I like this new branch of food heist mm-hmm. potential lore.
The food crime...
Yeah.
Canon continues to expand.
Yes. Though it is not what I thought. I thought we would be hearing about someone who, you know, smashed potatoes threw smashed
all
potatoes at
things.
The wall. And yeah. But no, this is just we're ruining a bunch of wine because for whatever reason.
Yeah. So the wine wasn't stolen.
Yes.
Or at least it wasn't taken. Mm-hmm. So no food heist prison for this guy. But
no.
Do you suppose that in food heist prison they are just boiling mad at him
for wasting
all the food?
Yeah.
Because their food.
I mean, this might be a turf war
themselves.
That we're talking about. Yeah.
This
yeah.
is like the anarchist of the food heist world.
Yeah,
just
this is
like,
the Joker.
Burn it down. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares.
Yep. Yeah, they definitely hate this person.
Yeah.
For their wasting of wine. And I mean, it's so much easier to just, I mean,
mm-hmm.
if you don't need.
It's always easier to break.
If you don't need
destroy.
Like 40,000 buckets. Then, I mean, what are you even doing? Right? The true food
yeah.
heist masters will get those 40,000 buckets. I know a bucket can carry more than a liter, but you know.
Those guys that stole like 2 million pounds of butter are sitting
yeah.
there thinking, no one has a work ethic anymore.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, well, it's this economy. I knew if I just kept making dumb jokes, one of them would get you.
So what you're saying is the food heist experts, because it's a bad economy, have been reduced to destroying instead of stealing because the economy is bad?
No, I'm saying
it's
that the
jobs
experts
they can get.
Are looking out at everyone else and they're saying, oh, just food vandalism, not heist?
No,
nobody
no.
wants to work anymore. That's
oh, okay. That's like those... Those Zoomers and those millennials.
Yeah.
It's like the boomer food heisters.
Like back in my day, we would have taken all that wine and we would have sold it to a hotel.
I'm just thinking of someone who's like an expert in food heist being like, what jobs can I get? And they're like, sorry, we don't have anything you can steal. You're just going to have to go to vandalism. They're like, that pays so much worse, but it's just the only job you can get.
If you go to a fancy restaurant
mm-hmm.
and you order wine and they lug it out in like one of those white plastic 5-gallon mm-hmm. buckets, you know that they're buying black market wine.
I had a good meal actually this week. I got to go to the Tree Room. I was up at Sundance.
Ooh.
It was good food there.
Well, mm-hmm. and you went to Valter's last night.
I did go to Valter's last night. Very
I
good
I was very
food
jealous.
There. Yeah. So I've kind of had a foodie week.
I have not eaten today.
Mm.
I did eat a piece of bread because there's bread outside.
We will make sure that you get some food sometime tonight.
I have found, mm-hmm. and I suspect this is part of the whole depression thing, I don't eat when I'm alone anymore. Eating is a purely social activity for me, which is weird because I used to just devour everything I could see.
That does sound like a depression thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
There you go. I did have a cherry limeade today,
mm.
but there's not a lot of protein and minerals in those.
No. I was just thinking, your beard coming in white, you're heading towards Santa Claus territory.
Should I grow it out all the way till Christmas?
I bet you could Santa.
I went to LTUE mm-hmm. last weekend, which is our local little regional con.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, at one point went in to use the hotel restroom, and I realized, looking in the mirror, I'm one of the weird old guys at the con. Like, I went to that con when I was 18, freshman mm-hmm. year of college. I've been going to that con forever, but now I'm one of the weird old guys.
And it's interesting, because you're younger than me.
Man.
But I don't think I'm one of the weird old guys yet.
Well, you haven't raised my son yet.
No. And I didn't have depression that kind of came ahead in the last couple of years between having a beard and not having a beard and having a beard again.
That's true.
So
we had that big meeting yesterday with all the officers, and I looked around and I realized Scar and I are the gray ones, and Scar and I are the ones with adult children.
Yes.
And then I realized, wait, Becky also has an adult child, and she looks young as the day is long, and I was very offended.
Well, I mean, you'd have to really compare Pete, her husband, and have a look.
That's true. They He's probably more gray than she is.
So, I don't have adult children yet.
Yeah.
A year and a half away, though.
Mm-hmm.
Joel will turn 18 in about a year and a half.
That's
so
not bad.
Mm-hmm. He is playing D&D with his friends.
Yay!
Yep. So, he's got a nice batch of friends who are rolling up new characters.
I love it.
So, what are we going to actually talk about today?
Okay,
we got
so
like 20 minutes left.
Here's my idea.
Okay.
And if this fails, it's not going to... See, Becky walked in because she heard us talking, saying nice things about her. If it fails, it will not be the first time that we have had a topic that fails.
Nope, nope.
But I have been thinking lately, because you can look at... You know, we had this huge boom of superhero movies where it seemed every single big ticket movie was a superhero movie for like 15 years. And Hollywood has gone through cycles like that before.
Yep.
In the 80s, we had the big muscly action hero Stallone and Schwarzenegger era.
Right.
Before that, we had a huge musical era where everything had songs in it. Before that, there were a solid 10 years where every big movie that came out was a Western.
Yeah, to the point that to get Star Trek made, Gene Roddenberry had to call it a
Wagon
space
Train
Western.
To the Stars. Yeah. And so I've been wondering to myself, what's next? And I don't know if there's any way to predict that.
So,
but
yeah, I mean, the what's next, I don't think I am equipped to do so either. I think the superhero boom was one of these things that in hindsight was kind of inevitable because you'll notice, at least I will notice, I've noticed, we didn't get a really big space opera boom after Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not for lack of trying.
Yeah.
It's because the special effects, unless you were ILM starting out, were too cheap looking and too bad in order to actually create that fantasy.
Yes.
And so we did get like a whole bunch of like cheap knockoffs and a whole bunch of expensive knockoffs. And even things like Lynch's Dune, where everyone's like, well, sci-fi is the next big thing, but they couldn't make it work because they didn't have the special effects yet.
We saw attempts.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Battlestar Galactica came from.
Yeah.
But we didn't see a big new wave of it.
Yeah. But we did see a lot like Star Wars, The Godfather, and Jaws that are credited with starting the kind of boom of the tentpole blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did see is they went to things that they could make with their current special effects budget. And some of those were definitely sci-fi, right? We're just not talking space opera. So you ended up with a lot of the Schwarzenegger movies were science fiction and things like that. And so you ended up with the muscly guys genre, as you talked about. We also saw the boom of horror in particularly slasher flick because the special effects didn't need to be amazing or could be really subdued.
The 70s and 80s slasher boom is absolutely another one of these.
Yeah. And I think the superhero one was kind of inevitable because once the special effects, talking particularly like the CG and things like that, caught up to the imagination, like most superhero stories are portal fantasies, meaning you're going to start in the real world and then you're going to transition to a fantastical. And it's not a whole world, but normal character gets superpowers and you're led easily into the fantasy world. It's very easy way. Easy is the wrong term, I would say.
Yeah,
Lord of the Rings is a bit of one as well, right? Because you start in the Shire and then transition out. You start with the familiar and go to the strange. And superhero is just a perfect way. By the end of the superhero genre, we had a whole bunch of Star Wars. So with Guardians of the Galaxy and all the cosmic stuff. So it's kind of interesting that what they tried to do in the early 80s, they could only do once they had special effects.
They had all that stuff.
And they could lead the audience into it with that kind of portal.
Because we had, you know, kind of a little before, in fact, several years before the superhero started, we had Fifth Element.
Yeah.
But then we didn't really get all the space operas until Jupiter Ascending and whatever the terrible French one was.
Valerian in the
Valerian.
City. Yeah, of a thousand, whatever.
And yeah.
So, I think the problem
we
is
we did eventually get to those.
We did, but they didn't take off because they didn't have a seed film to really exploded for everyone to copy. Mm-hmm. And for that seed film to work, like, you will find good sci-fi space operas all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But the seed one was Star Wars, and then we got the big boom following it, and they all flopped. Same thing happened with fantasy films. Lord of the Rings was a big seed property.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone tried to copy it, but the only successful one was the first Narnia movie, I would say. Or, actually, Pirates of the Caribbean is probably in that same.
Yeah.
I mean, those are...
I think we do have to call that.
The problem is the first one's not an epic fantasy, but two and three are.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one's the strong one, and it's more of a straight up. I mean, it is. It has
it's
epic fantasy.
And it has undead in it.
But you had this seed movie of Lord of the Rings, and then no one could replicate it. They bought a whole bunch of YA properties. I think that was partially
that's
a mistake.
That's when we got Aragorn. Yeah. That's when we got the first Lightning Thief, or whatever that was called. And yeah, it was they.
There were a whole bunch of them. Golden Compass.
It's because they were making those movies at the same time that the YA dystopia boom was huge.
Yeah.
And so people said, well, everyone loves Hunger Games, and everyone loves Lord of the Rings. Let's buy Aragorn. And it just didn't work out.
I think that for a long time during this period, I'm like, they learned the wrong lesson. What people were waiting for in Lord of the Rings as a seed film was to see the great epic fantasies, like, for a more mature audience. It doesn't have to be Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones is the only one that really managed to land in that patch other than Pirates of the Caribbean. And both of those are not YA properties. And I think part of the problem is all the YA properties, they were misfiring a little bit. They weren't hitting that older demographic that wanted to see Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know they tried some really good ones, but they also just weren't able to make a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
The Golden Compass is an amazing book, but the film is a bit of a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Have we talked about Golden Compass?
I don't think we have. I read the whole series, did not like the movie at all, haven't watched the TV series yet.
I haven't watched it either. I have a theory on the film, though. It's one of these things that, like, the film should have worked. The casting is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The people, as I imagine in the book, came to life on the screen. They tried really hard to stay true to the lore and the narrative of the book. And the visuals were stunning. And the movie was boring. And it's just one of those things where translating the book to a film, staying true to it, didn't work for whatever reason. It's one of those case studies where I'm like, what? And I can't even really figure it out. What went wrong in trying to stay so true and do such a good job to make a film so bad?
I don't know. That would be one where we need like a Patrick Willems to analyze that rather than us.
Yeah, because for a while I'm like, well, you must not be able to translate a book straight to a film and have it work. But Dune, as we were talking about before we started filming, I mean, it's not a one-to-one translation, but it's as close.
It's a pretty faithful one.
It's as close as Golden Compass is. And it's great. It's really watchable. And it's so obviously you can do it. You can take it and go one-to-one, essentially, and make a great film.
Yeah. And I don't know enough about film to know if that's something. Did the script fall down? Did the directing fall down? Did the editing fall down?
I think it's at least partially the script, because when I was watching Golden Compass and analyzing it, having read the book, they were so true to the story that they wanted to make sure all the information got to. And so if you watch that again, there's just a lot of people standing around giving you information.
Yeah.
And scenes that are dynamic in the book, they didn't have time for. And it's actually faster to just have two people explain the same things you learn from the scene. This is, you know, the show versus tell. But it's almost always takes more time to show than to tell. And so rather than cut the scene, they trimmed it and had people explain what happened.
Mm-hmm. And then got the information across that way.
Yeah.
And for all of the massive liberties that the Lord of the Rings movies take with the books, one thing that they were doing while trimming down the long stuff and cutting out things they couldn't include, they were also adding drama. constantly. Extra character conflicts, extra points of drama to make it as exciting and as compelling as they could.
Right. Well, and scenes to show, like they would cut five big chunks in. This might be easier with Tolkien because some of those chunks can be kind of long. And mm-hmm. then you can take those and construct a scene that does the legwork of some of those scenes. I always point out one of my favorite changes is the scene where Sam gets sent away by Frodo and comes back. And it's my favorite change, I think, in all of the Lord of the Rings films. And it's very contentious. Back in the 2000s, people hated this change.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite because not having read three books worth of material of those traveling together, mm-hmm. it's hard for you to get the same sense of Sam's loyalty in the film that you can in the books, particularly at that point where you've seen him grumbling and complaining. And there's a danger that the film audience would start to say, why is Sam even here? Right? And so you construct a scene that some people think is against and counter to the personality of the characters, that Frodo would send Sam away and Sam would go. Mm-hmm. But this scene by him returning and saving Frodo the way he does, like
yeah.
that whole thing works so well to prove Sam's loyalty is his superpower that it replaces chapters and chapters and chapters
yeah.
in the books. And you could have instead replaced that with a conversation where Sam is like, Mr. Frodo, you know that I'm the most loyal person that ever, and you're a member of this
time. I will never leave you.
Yeah.
Well, and that scene also gives us the shorthand for Gollum is insidious and manipulative.
Yep.
And Frodo is so corrupted by the ring, he can't think straight anymore.
Yep.
And you get those all showing rather than telling and mm-hmm. compressed and short.
It's just a brilliant example of how to take what is in a book and make something new that works on the screen to convey the same information. And it's so powerful. One of my very favorite moments. And so, yeah, I think that that's part of the problem with Golden Compass is it just didn't have those things, which is a real shame because, again, the visual design and the casting.
Casting was so good.
And you can tell the people making this film read and enjoyed the book and were trying hard. And we've all done something where we sit down to write something and it doesn't work. And I can see that happening on the screen and my heart goes out to them, mm-hmm. right? There are some yeah. times when people make something and it seems so opposite to the concept of the original that my heart does not go out to them, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I haven't been able to bring
Rings
myself
of power.
To watch. Well, Rings of Power... I wouldn't say that on Rings of Power.
It's not an opposite thing, but yep. yeah.
I would say that on something like Halo, the Halo television show, where it's like...
Yeah. They clearly had very little, if any, love for the source material, for yeah. the vibe that the games give, mm-hmm. and were trying to tell a completely different story with the one license they had access to.
Exactly. And not to say, some people might enjoy that story. It might be well told in its way, but...
But it's not Halo.
Yeah. I hear that season 2 might be better. I haven't watched any of it because I can't bring myself to. But yeah. So what's next? I think part of the issue is that we could be at the end of the blockbuster era that started mm-hmm. with Jaws the Godfather and Star Wars, right? Which is a big deal. We don't know yet, but we could be there. And that's a shakeup we haven't seen in Hollywood for 50 years. And the fact that major blockbusters with tentpole actors and tentpole franchises that get a decent critical reception are flopping is a very big deal for Hollywood. And so what's next is, I think, scarier than it used to be.
Yeah. And, you know, if we're seeing the end of the blockbuster era,
mm-hmm.
it is more because of technology and viewing patterns
yes.
than any artistic merit of the movies that come out.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that the superhero era really took blockbusters to their apex, right?
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing, and everything is going to cost $200 million now or more, $400 in a lot of cases. I remember when Waterworld came out and it crossed $200 million and was, at the time, the most expensive movie ever made, and everyone lost their minds. And today, that's small change.
Well, the other thing that they did is... So I say this fully aware that I am part of one of these, right? Mm-hmm. These connected universes are a potential house of cards.
Yeah.
because one of the problems that I've been very aware of in the Cosmere that I want to be very careful about is when people stop following it, getting back into it is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you skip 5 James Bond movies and then you decide to go see one, you're not lost.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem at all. But if you skip 5 MCU movies, you're not going to go see the new Avengers movie, which mm-hmm. is their kind of linchpin where they expect to make their money back, having spent a lot of money setting up these characters.
Yeah.
And that can be a house of cards.
In spite of that, mm-hmm. I think that if I were to predict what's next, it's yeah. what we can already see growing and what we've had for 10 years, which is long form storytelling.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that that's, but is that at its apex?
I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. I think they're continuing to come out. I think, for example, I watched The English on Amazon mm-hmm. with Emily Blunt and Chesky Spencer.
Yep.
It's only 5 episodes and they're an hour long. And I realized, oh, this isn't a TV show. This is a miniseries like we used to have on TV when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And if what we see now is the rise of the miniseries.
I would love that.
A story that is too big for a movie mm-hmm. and too small for a show. And so you're just going to give us 4, 5, 6 hours of really well-done long-form content. It seems like that might be the sweet spot that we haven't hit yet.
So here's the problem, though. They're going to have to stop writing those like network television shows.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem with Rings of Power. This is the problem, as much as I like it, with Ted Lasso. This is the problem with Wheel of Time, to an extent. Is this idea of we aren't embracing the new form. We are trying to write a network show mm-hmm. that just has 12 episodes. And so the interconnected tissue, the long form character arcs, it doesn't feel like a 12-hour movie. It feels like 12 episodes mm-hmm. with all the foibles of a 24-episode season, just shorter.
Just compressed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I do think that Game of Thrones mm-hmm. has a lot to do with how those shows are constructed.
Right.
Rings of Power did not need to have 10 separate stories with the cast of millions, but Game of Thrones was successful, so of course it did.
And again, I really do like the whole team working on Wheel of Time. I think they've done some great things. But one of my big fights with the showrunner has been, you know, he's like, well, this is how we do it in television. I'm like, but this is how we do it in long-form storytelling, right? And what you're making should be more like the long-form storytelling rather than the episodic television that is his background. That's what he knows how to make. And I can't blame him entirely because, you know, you come from network television, you learn how to make a show. But I think this is my big problem with some of the streaming shows is this idea.
Yeah.
I want them to write an entire season. And I want them to workshop that entire season. And I want them to get those scripts good and then film that. And I don't see that happening a ton. I see them sitting down and coming up with a concept for the season, sending someone to start writing, someone else to start writing, you to start writing, yours gets done. You tell them, we need you to finish your scenes that are taking place in the same place as this one because we got to have our film date mm-hmm. next month. So they go film those 3 scenes from those 3 episodes written by 3 different people, workshopped a little bit, but then you get it back and then you're doing like, the scripts are never done by the time they start filming. That's not how Hollywood television works. And that really bothers me because I can see it in their storytelling. And say what you will of a long-form book series like The Wheel of Time or something. If you pick up one of those books, Robert Jordan had a chance to revise that whole book and create a
make it exactly what he wanted it to be
for you rather than even if some of the stuff he came up with off the cuff while I was working on it, he got a chance to integrate that all. And mm-hmm. so I hope you're right, but I hope they're also willing to tell stories a little bit more like a film because you usually don't start filming your film until your script's done. I know it happens sometimes. Little Donald over here is like, yes, I've seen it happen. But yeah. Sorry, I call him Little Donald because I know.
Because you know.
You need to call him Donald the Younger, not Little Don, because he's not
I
small.
See, I met him first.
Yeah.
And then I went to his wedding reception and I met his father mm-hmm. and I was like, why are you my age? Because I'm like, he's my friend. He counts as my age. You're supposed to be an old man. And that's not how it was.
Guess what, Dan?
Ben, you're old.